Happy Writer. This is a podcast that aims to bring readers more books to enjoy and to help authors find more joy in their writing. I am your host, Marissa Meyer. Thank you for joining me. I am so happy this week. I am bubbling over with happiness because here in 2 short weeks, or 1 week from the time you guys are hearing this, I will be in Disney World. I am so excited. I am such a Disney fan. I love the parks. And as many of you know, I have been training to run my very first half marathon, the Disney Princess Half Marathon, which is happening on February 27th. And I have worked so hard to accomplish this thing that seemed like an absolutely impossible goal not all that long ago. And so I'm feeling very confident, but also very nervous. So send me good running vibes, please. And I can't wait to post about the experience on social media if you want to check it out. And then, of course, after the race, I get to spend a week in Disney World with my family. And I am just really, really excited. So I just can't even express how happy that is making me right now. Of course, I am also so happy to be talking to today's guest. She's an award-winning writer, a book coach, and the host of the Overflowing Bookshelves podcast. Her debut YA novel, The Best Week That Never Happened, was a finalist in the International Book Awards. And her newest novel, Thanks Carissa for Ruining My Life, just came out a few weeks ago. Please welcome Dallas Woodburn.
Hi, Marissa. Thanks so much for having me.
Thank you so much for being here. I have to say, your name, Dallas Woodburn, you sound like a fictional character.
I've gotten that before, actually. My first boyfriend, his friends, when he told them about me, they were like, really? That's her name? Is that a made-up name?
You sound like a cowboy. I feel like you should be writing Westerns. What are you doing with your life?
Yes, maybe I should switch over. Yeah, and it's funny. My dad is a sports writer. And so people always thought, I live in California and he covered the LA sports teams, but people always thought maybe he was just a big Cowboys fan or something. But yeah. it's a family name. It was my grandpa's middle name was Dallas.
Aw, I like that.
Yes. Yeah. It's nice having that connection.
Yeah. Yeah. We have the middle names of the women in our family have been passed down for a number of generations. And so that's kind of our thing too, but nothing as unique as Dallas.
Oh, thank you. Yeah, I do like it. I like having a unique name with a story behind it.
Yeah. Yeah. And it works with Woodburn too. Like the whole package just sounds very like intentional.
Oh, well, thank you. I will tell my parents, good job.
Right. Marissa Meyer says. All right. So the question we start with for all of our guests here is that I want to know about your origin story as a writer. And I know from some of our emails, you had quite a long path, quite a long journey to becoming a published author. So I'm very excited to hear about how did the journey go for you?
Yes. So I mentioned my dad is a journalist. So when I was growing up, he was a sports columnist for our local paper, and he now is more of a general interest columnist and writes books. And so looking back, I've always felt like I had an advantage, or maybe kind of like a little bit of a sneak peek in that I grew up with a writer in my family and I got to watch him at work. And I think for a lot of us, maybe when we grew up loving reading, you know, I loved reading, I loved books, I loved making up stories. But I was just always really aware that they didn't just magically appear in the library on the bookshelves, like that there was someone who actually wrote them and that was something that you could do. And so I just always, always wanted to be a writer. And I actually, Marissa, when I was in fifth grade, my school, they had this grant where you could do something creative, and it was $50. And so I applied to put together a little book of my short stories and my poems and my illustrations. And I got the grant. And so this was back in like the late 90s. I remember going to Kinko's to like print up copies of my book. It was, you know, self-publishing, I guess, back in the day. And it was just such a great experience because my classmates were so supportive. I like sold out of my first printing. I had to go back and print out more. And it just was such a wonderful experience for me to realize I love writing for myself, but I also love sharing my work with others and like having that connection with others. So I studied writing in college, went on to grad school and studied fiction writing, and just wrote. And my first novel that ended up getting published, The Best Week That Never Happened, it was my fourth novel manuscript that I'd completed. And so it's funny, sometimes they don't get published in the order that you write them. So thanks, Carissa, which just came out, I had started writing that one about a decade ago when I was in grad school. It was my kind of secret fun YA project that I was working on late at night when all of my classmates were writing like very serious literary fiction. So yeah, it's just extra exciting. I mean, it's gone through many, many revisions and drafts since I first wrote that first draft, but it just feels extra special to have it out in the world now because it, like you said, it's been a long journey.
It is an entire decade. That's incredible.
Yes. Yeah. And I think I was reflecting on it the other day about just why did I keep trying? And I think I just love my main characters so much. Like whenever I kind of wanted to maybe give up on it, I would just imagine them and I just didn't want to give up on them. You know, I wanted to just keep trying, you know, submitting it again, seeing if somebody else related to the book the way that I just love the characters so much.
Yeah. So writing this book over the course of an entire decade, was that like you would dabble and maybe write a chapter or two and then set it aside for 6 months, a year, and then come back? Or were you like writing multiple drafts and okay, a year later, let's go back and revise it again. A year later, let's go back and revise it again.
It was more like that second option. So the first draft, I'm a little bit of a slow drafter and I was in grad school. So I was working on some other projects for my courses and teaching. So the first draft was kind of a slow process where I would come back to it in fits and starts. And then, yeah, I would be, you know, finishing the draft, setting it aside, getting feedback from beta readers, revising it, setting it aside, submitting it, setting it aside, coming back. So it was definitely not a continual decade long of just of only working on this book. And actually, like I said, I ended up going on and I wrote two other manuscripts after this one. So it's more just like a decade of, I guess, first spark of an idea to publication.
Yeah. Did you go through multiple rounds of querying with it?
I did. So I had a literary agent when I wrote this book and they ended up not wanting to submit it. So I ended up finding a different literary agent who submitted it and we didn't get it. We got some, you know, manuscript requests, but just no one ultimately went with it. And then similarly, I ended up kind of a long story, ended up having a different agent who set it out and didn't get anything. So it just was a lot of high hopes and then kind of disappointments. But I do feel like over the years, you know, every time I went back to it and worked on it some more, I just feel like it got better and better. And I'm a big believer in timing, and as frustrating as it was when I really wanted it to be published, you know, 5 years ago when it was out on submission and it wasn't picked up. I looking back, I do feel like it worked out the way it was supposed to, because I think it's the best version of itself now.
Yeah. And I think that it's very timely for right now too. And with all of the, I mean, we'll talk a little bit more about this because listeners haven't even heard what the book is about yet. But, you know, there's a lot of body positivity elements in the story that I think, you know, are just really powerful for young readers to hear right now.
Thank you.
Not that they wouldn't have been powerful 10 years ago, but I just think that that's a big thing that we've all become so much more aware of.
Agreed. And I think that looking back at my journey with my own feelings about my body and food freedom and body positivity, I think that in the same way that my characters go through a journey in the book, you know, I really feel like I've come a long way with that too. So I agree. And thank you for saying that.
Yeah. All right. We'll come back to that because I do want to talk about that a little bit more. But first, would you please tell listeners, what is this book even about? Tell us about Thanks, Carissa, for Ruining My Life, which is such a fun title to say.
Thank you. I like to describe it as the movie Brittany Runs a Marathon meets the movie Some Kind of Wonderful. I've also heard it compared to the Taylor Swift song, You Belong With Me. So we have two, it's a dual POV. There's two main characters, and one of them is Rose. She is the title, Carissa. She's Chris's twin sister. And then the other one is Brad, and he is Chris's ex-boyfriend. Carissa breaks up with him in the first chapter. And so I like to think of it almost as a triangle structure where Carissa is not a POV character in the novel, but she's almost like the linchpin that connects my two POV characters, at least at the beginning of the book. And they both feel like she has ruined their lives in the opening chapters. Brad, because she breaks up with him out of the blue and he's heartbroken and trying to get her back. And then Rose, because Carissa signs Rose up for this reality television show called Help Me Lose Weight and Live Again. And so Rose is being shipped off to Texas to be on this reality TV show. And she is very upset at Carissa for ruining her life as well. But as the novel goes on, we see that maybe there are some surprising ways that maybe their lives aren't ruined after all.
So right off the bat, one of the things that really jumped out to me when I was reading the book is that you set yourself up for a very interesting writing challenge, in that this is a romance between these two point of view characters. And yet from page one, they are physically separated from each other. They are in two separate states. And Rose, being a contestant on this reality TV show, is not allowed to have communication with people back home. So from the beginning, like, you're making it clear there's going to be romance developing. But as a reader and a writer, I was just like, well, how on earth are we going to make that happen? They're never together. They can't talk. They never see each other. So very unique situation in a romance novel. For you, what challenges did that pose, and what were some things that you were actively working on to try to develop the romance throughout the story?
Such a great question. And I think so. One of the themes in the book is this idea of, yes, it's a romance novel between my two main characters, but I think also it's this idea of, not to sound cheesy, but like a romance with yourself and really learning to love yourself and accept yourself. And I personally feel like we, when we're at a good place in our lives, where we're really happy with ourselves, is when we kind of open the door for the right romance to come into our lives. So in some ways, it was helpful to have my characters separated for at least the first part of the novel, so they could really, I don't want to say work on themselves, but kind of just like explore themselves separate from each other, and kind of just get into like who they are alone, because Rose is in this new situation where she's in this whole new place away from her family and friends and away from her typical daily life. And then similar, Brad, he's in the same place, but his girlfriend's broken up with him. He feels awkward around his friends. So he also is kind of feeling like he's alone in a lot of ways. So it helped me to have them alone while still thinking of each other before, in the middle of the book, is when they get to actually have some scenes together. And it was really exciting to get to finally have them in the same place interacting.
I bet as a writer who loves romance, I'm always just like, but when do we get to see them together again? So I can imagine that for you, you were like, finally, we got here.
Yes. And I will say too, Marissa, I kind of jump around as I write. So I did write, I didn't write it completely in order. So I did skip around and write some of those scenes when they were together before I wrote some of the earlier scenes too, because I just couldn't wait to get there.
I know that feeling so much. Like sometimes you need to release some of the tension for yourself before you can go back and actually write the other stuff. Well, I love this idea of writing a romance with yourself, or these characters kind of having a romance with themselves. And that makes perfect sense in the context of this book, because we really do have two very significant character arcs for both Brad and for Rose. You know, they change a lot. I don't know. They change how they see themselves a great deal. For you, when you're writing, at what point in the process are you really starting to like dig into the character arc, and how are these characters going to grow and change? Is that like central to the original initial planning for you, or is it something that you kind of start working on and developing in later drafts?
Such a great question. I think for this book, it was pretty central at the beginning, where I sort of knew where they were when they started. And then I had a sense of where I wanted them to be at the end, but I didn't quite know how they were going to get there. And a lot developed as I was working on the actual plot, was sort of seeing how they were going to come to certain realizations about themselves. And I was also interested in exploring how they see themselves reflected in other people, and how sometimes they think that other people see them versus maybe how other people actually see them. So it's interesting having the dual POV where you're able to explore the same scene from different perspectives. And so, for example, my main character, Rose, believes at the beginning that Brad would never see her as anything but a friend. But then we get some memories or some things from Brad's perspective where he sees Rose in a completely different way. You know, and he even thinks at one point, I wish she could see herself the way that I see her. And so I think the dual POV sort of helped me get to explore my characters from different angles. So think about their own character arcs and also the ways that they see each other, if that makes sense.
It does. It does. And I loved getting both perspectives. I think when it comes to like these character arcs dealing with more like self-love and self-appreciation, and like this idea that I am a great person and I deserve amazing things in my life, I think we see in young adult fiction, we see a lot of that from the female perspective. I thought it was really refreshing to also see that from the guy's perspective, because they deserve self-love too.
Yes. Yes, I agree. And I'm very close. I have a younger brother. He's just 2 years younger than I am. And we're very close. And he's one of my early readers. People ask me sometimes, like, what was it like writing from a guy's perspective? And I'm not saying I did it 100%, you know, accurately. I tried my best, but it's helpful to have him kind of to play ideas off of. And he's just such an amazing person. And we have just a very open relationship where we talk with each other a lot about what we're going through. And so when I was dating, I would, you know, call him and talk about things, and similar with him. And so I think maybe some of Brad had to do with just thinking about my brother, who is this amazing person, and he's getting married later this year. He found his person, but there was some time where he would, you know, call me and say, I don't know what I'm doing wrong. Like, I don't know why no one seems to, you know, like me. And I would just tell him, you're amazing. Like, just keep being yourself. And so I think that's where a lot of Brad's character came from too.
Yeah. No, it can be helpful to have someone in real life, not necessarily to base a character off of, but to just like have that, I don't know, that mental and emotional guidance. Like, okay, there are some similarities here, and I feel connected to this character because of them.
Yes. Yeah, exactly. I don't know about you, Marissa, but I feel like when I'm creating characters, sometimes in the beginning, I have a person I'm sort of thinking about with them, and then quickly they become their own person. But I like how you've seen at least emotionally maybe to have someone that you're basing them on to help you feel more connected.
Yeah, no, definitely. It makes a lot of sense. I'm wondering, do you have any like tips or advice for writing character arcs in particular? Because there are both of the characters do go through such pretty big emotional transformations. Like, what would you say to a writer who's maybe struggling with that?
Yes. I would say I've always thought of more of a character-driven writer as opposed to a plot-driven writer. But it really helped me when one of my teachers in graduate school was talking about the ways in which character arc and plot arc are connected. And so this idea of with your character arc, you want to see how the events that transpire kind of push against your character's biggest weakness or biggest fear or biggest stumbling block you have to kind of get over or get through in order to reach their goal, like become who they're meant to be, get what they want. And so for me, that was really helpful to think about plot and character connected in that way. Like, okay, the Rose, you know, for example, she starts out feeling really insecure about herself and like she doesn't quite belong. And I know by the end of the book, I want her to feel so comfortable in her skin and feel very accepted and feel like she can be her authentic self. So what do I have to have happen in the story to challenge her beliefs in order so she can kind of like break through them and get to that place where she is supposed to be? And I think it's a little bit counterintuitive sometimes in that our characters have to get broken down before they can build themselves back up. Like it might sometimes feel like two steps forward, one step back, where you're actually, like challenging your character's notions about themselves in order to break through those to get to the changes that they're experiencing. So for me, that was really helpful to think of plot and character connected in that way and the arcs of the plot and the character being kind of parallel and also intertwined.
Yeah, no, as you're talking, I was thinking about, you know how sometimes you see those diagrams that are like a visual representation of plot structure. And it's like, it starts down at the bottom and then you go up and then there's a little dip and then you go up a little bit higher and then a dip. And usually they're used to show like how the plot of the story should, you know, be building to this climax, but there should be setbacks, blah, blah, blah. And as you were talking, I was like, it's very similar with the character arc itself. Like I love this idea of the two steps forward, one step back. Feels very natural and very like, that's how we are in real life. You don't just conquer everything. You have to try and fail a few times.
Yes, exactly. And I think that helps the character arc feel more authentic or feel more lasting when our characters do have some of those highs and lows, like a roller coaster, like you were mentioning Disney World, it sort of is like, it have that, those ups and downs. It's not just one straight line.
Yes, for sure. I'm curious, knowing that you worked on this book for so long, how much did the final published version change from that first draft more than 10 years ago?
I am definitely an underwriter in that my first drafts tend to be pretty lean. And when I'm editing and revising, I'm adding things. So adding scenes, adding details, just adding things to make the world more rich. And so my first draft, there were definite scenes in the final draft that weren't there at the beginning. And also working on it over that span of time, there are things that I had to change as far as like technology and references. Just it's interesting going back when you're editing something and you catch an old reference. Like I think actually, Marissa, I sent you the arc of it that I think still had landlines in there that I had went through and, you know, switched those out because some early readers were saying, we don't have landlines anymore. Just things like that. Just some details with subplots and some of my side characters, just sort of fleshing them out more. But I think in general, the spine of the story really remained the same.
Mm-hmm. No, it is so funny with technology. I feel like this is one of the biggest drawbacks maybe to writing contemporary fiction, is it like by the time the book is published, it's already outdated. Things change so quickly.
It's so true. It's, yeah, it's really funny. I was talking to a friend where she said, well, maybe you should just set all your books in the early 2000s and then you won't have to worry about it.
Yep, we can't argue with you then. I want to talk about the third character in our triangle of sorts. Let's talk about Carissa, who is, of course, the title character. Thanks, Carissa, for ruining my life. And what I love about her in particular is that as a reader, you can shift your perspective from thinking she's the villain of the story, or if you look at it from this angle, suddenly she becomes the hero of the story, which is very fun to think about. For you, like, which do you think she is? Is she the villain or is she the hero?
I love how you describe her. I think she is both. And actually, Marissa, so when I first started writing this book, I was just getting over my first breakup with my college boyfriend. And I was actually the one who broke up with him. And so I think some of that was inspiration for the book. But I was sort of like the Carissa in that scenario, because I'm sure he felt like it was out of the blue and I was the one who broke up with him. And so I'm very different than Carissa is, but, I sort of feel like I was trying to, I guess, explore that situation from a different perspective. And so I never saw Carissa as the villain, even though she does some things that are very frustrating and some people, you know, maybe even a little bit cruel. But I do feel like her heart is in the right place and like she's trying to help, even though she often goes about it the wrong way. But something also interesting about her is we only see her from others' perspectives. So we only see her from her twin sister Rose's perspective and her ex-boyfriend Brad's perspective, who have very complex relationships with her. So it was important to me that by the end of the book, hopefully the reader sees her in a little bit more of a balanced light as her own person who's just, you know, trying to live her life in the best way that she can and is making mistakes, but is also kind of learning. She has her own character arc as well. She's learning her own things too, even though it happens off the page.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think that she also is like her character arc could continue, you know? I think that she is a very rounded character, but that we've only gotten like a snippet of that story. I think that she's got a lot further to go, but you can like see it in progress.
Yes. Yeah. Yes. Yeah. And she was fun to write sometimes. Her, she's very different than I am in a lot of ways. And so sometimes it was kind of fun to write her, mean girl-esque, you know, lines and dialogue and just kind of her, character was fun to write.
Yeah. I am wondering, so there is of course in like so many, so much contemporary fiction or so many movies, there is this mean girl stereotype. How did you keep her from becoming just that, the stereotype, the cliche? Like, what can writers do to make sure they're not falling into that?
Well, thank you for saying that. I'm glad that she seemed rounded to you. I would say, I think when characters are able to not be stereotypes in our heads, it makes us easier to present them on the page as real people. And so, you know, for Carissa, I think I really tried to nail down like what I could identify with, you know, in my life or my memories. And I guess for all my characters, but so especially ones that maybe you feel like could fall into some sort of cookie cutter or like stereotype. Are there ways that you can present the other side of them or present aspects that go against that stereotype or against that narrative? So Carissa throughout the book is often a very kind of hard-edged character. But through the course of the book, we do get to see moments when like her mask slips off and that facade kind of falls away. And so to me, that was important, hopefully, in presenting a deeper side of her than perhaps the version that she shows the rest of the world.
Yeah. No, I loved her. I love kind of an antagonistic character, but then I also love when it is revealed that there's more going on beneath the surface.
I agree. It's one of my favorite things as a reader to get to kind of peek into the character.
Yeah. No, I know. And I think that we all have memories of our younger years, or maybe even not so younger years. You know, we all make mistakes and we all have things that we're like, oh, I really could have been nicer there. Or I could have done this differently or said this differently. And I think it's important to see that in fictional characters sometimes and realize like we're all doing our best and we're all trying to be better.
Yes. Yes, exactly.
So earlier we touched on this idea of body positivity, which is a huge part of the story, particularly Rose, who has been kind of forced into this weight loss reality TV challenge. So talk a little bit about writing that theme into the story and like, what are maybe some of the deeper messages that you're hoping readers are going to take away from this?
I love this question. And thank you for touching upon this because it's a really important part of the book for me and my heart. And the message that I'm hoping gets across to readers is really this idea of loving ourselves for who we are and just really appreciating our bodies for all that they can do and all that they do for us. And, for Rose, she really goes through this both internal and external transformation throughout the story. But as she says at the end, like a lot of it was, she's still the same person that she was all along. She's just more of herself. It's almost like she just is feeling more fully like she is herself and she's able to shine her light and she's not hiding herself anymore. And so I think that her external transformation really mirrors that, just like acceptance of herself and just really being amazed by her body and all that it can do. I think that at different points in my life, and especially when I think back to when I was in high school or college, like I don't feel like I really appreciated my body as much as I do now, just in all the things that it allows me to do, whether that's travel or like go for a run or climb mountains, or I have a daughter, like play with her. And so I'm hoping that readers, think about their own relationships with their bodies and the ways that they might approach that with more gratitude and just accept themselves. I think if I could capture Rose's journey, you know, in one word, it would really just be acceptance.
Mm-hmm. No, I think it's a really important message. I'm wondering, was it challenging? Because you do have, she does have a physical transformation, which is almost, I mean, to me reading it, it's very secondary. Like she does lose weight as a part of this reality TV show, which we're kind of assuming like if that wasn't happening, then she probably would have been kicked off the show at some point, and then that would like stop the plot dead in its tracks. And yet at the end, for me, what was coming across was not, oh, I lost the weight and now I love myself. It was like, I've loved myself all along and now I just have the confidence to show it. And it wasn't about the weight loss. It was about learning that like who I am on the inside is freaking awesome. And everyone should appreciate that. Was it challenging for you trying to kind of balance those two things, like have a weight loss element without like saying like, but it's not about the weight loss. It's about more than that.
Yes. Yes. And when I was just getting the idea for this book and trying to think about Rose's arc and the plot, I was trying to make things really hard for her. I think it's good if we can make things hard for our characters and put our characters in just really tough situations. And so for her, like when I was brainstorming, like what are the just that, what would be like the worst possible thing that could happen to her? It would be having to go through this internal transformation, but like on this reality TV show where there's cameras everywhere and there's so much focus on this, you know, external change. And I mean, I do feel like in this day and age of social media, just in some ways that we kind of are on reality shows ourselves. And it's just become more and more pronounced in the decades since I've started writing this book. And so, yeah, it was really important to me that I'm glad you said that to you, her internal transformation and just her realization that she's been this beautiful swan all along. There's this quote about, you know, wish someone saw her as an ugly duckling turned into a swan, and like, no, she was this swan all along. It just took her a while to see it. But so I wanted it to be, I guess, to really push her by putting her in this situation where everything just seems like on stage. She can't really hide anymore.
Yeah. That sounds awful. I would hate that so much.
Me too.
Okay. I do want to switch gears a little bit because I know you have lots of irons in the fire. In addition to being a writer, you are also a podcaster and a book coach. So for listeners who are like, what is a book coach? What is a book coach?
I love being a book coach. And it is, if you imagine having a coach for other areas of your life, like if you grew up playing sports and you had a coach for different sports that you played, it's similar to that, but it is helping people write books. So I have an online community. It's called Thriving Authors Academy, and it's for people who really want to write a book. They have a book in their heart. Maybe they've tried writing it before and they just feel like for whatever reason, they're struggling to finish, or they feel just really discouraged or kind of alone in their writing. It's this online community. It's, I guess I would kind of describe it as almost like a class, a program, like a group where we meet every week. And I kind of help coach you through the process of writing a book. So it's both accountability and also cheerleading, sometimes a gentle kick in the pants. And so much of the writing process is mental. I think we all have little gremlins and fears and doubts that pop up. And so often just having a coach, having someone there to say, you know, what's coming up for you and like working through that together just really is so helpful in getting you to the finish line, especially if it's the first book that you're working on.
Yeah. No, I think accountability is huge. You know, it can be really hard to self-motivate sometimes and really nice just to have someone, you know, nudging you along every now and then.
Exactly. It's so important to me in my writing, and I have multiple people tell me, oh, I don't know if I would have written this week if I didn't know that we had our meeting where I was going to have to say what I did.
Yeah, no, I know. I remember being in college and taking writing classes, and that was one of the things that taught me, like, there is no writer's block. That's not an option. You got to turn something in on Friday.
You know? Yes. And I think it helps you prioritize it too. Sometimes we have other urgent tasks that get in the way of our writing. But when you have that accountability, you have that group, you have that class, you're like, okay, I need to get this done. I'm going to really carve out the time for it.
Yeah. What would you say is maybe one of the top things that you see aspiring writers struggling with, and how do you help them through it?
Great question. I would say one of the top things is, so I call the middle of a book, I call it the muddy middle. I think that a lot of people that I work with kind of get stuck around the middle. It's less exciting than it was when they first started, and it still feels kind of far from the end. And I think that's when a lot of our self-doubts and fears kind of creep in more and more. And also where we sometimes get shiny object syndrome, where we want to jump ship and start work on a new idea instead of finishing the one we're working on. So I really like to tell people that it might feel kind of messy. It might feel like you don't quite know what you're doing, or it might feel like the book is just this big chaotic, you know, mess, but that I think that's really normal for the middle and just to keep plugging away. Because once you get to the end, you can always, you know, you can go back and rework things and tweak things and change them. And, one of my favorite writing teachers, Amy Bender, she used to tell us in our writing workshops that you cannot edit a blank page, which is so true. It's always so much better to have that first draft done and then you can go back and work with it. So I think for a lot of writers that are in my program as well, it's just recognizing that it's a normal part of the process. There's nothing wrong with you. There's nothing wrong with your book. If there are times where it feels a little bit hard to keep going or things seem a little bit messy, and just to kind of trust in yourself and trust in this idea that you have, and just to keep moving forward.
Yeah, no, it's seriously not you. It is so universal, this the mucky middle and how middles are so difficult, and the shiny new idea syndrome, which always pops up like when you're most trying to focus on something, like, no, I really need to get this done. And ooh, what is this other idea?
It's so true. And you just have to have that dedication to the finish line of that. Yeah. Similar to training, you're talking about training for your half marathon. I feel like there are days where you don't really feel like going for a run or doing the training, or but you still do, and then you're going to have your amazing race at Disney World, you know, at the end.
No, it is funny. I actually have been thinking I should write a blog post about how all of the ways that running and writing are so similar. I've been shocked at how much overlap there is and how many analogies you can make between the two, because there's a lot of similarities.
So many similarities. Yes.
Have you ever had anyone, a client or someone you were trying to coach through writing, that you were a little bit like, you know what, maybe this isn't for you?
No, I mean, I think so. A lot of people that I work with, maybe aren't going to end up becoming authors as like their career, that maybe it's just this one book inside of them that they really want to get out to share with the world. Maybe they're writing a memoir, like to share with their family. You know, so I do think that this, the business of being an author, you know, the publishing business can be, a tough one, and like, it's not for everyone. But at the same time, I do believe that there is such power in writing down our stories. I believe that everyone has stories to share. And I do feel like writing is this transformational process for us. And there's one thing just to have stories in your mind, but I just feel there's something about writing it down that is just so powerful. And so yeah, I mean, everyone that I've worked with, I'm so proud of them. And it's been amazing to see the ripples that happen in other areas of their life as well. Like I've had people who have decided to go back to school. I've had people change careers. I've had people kind of have these family healing reunions that occur after they write their book. That yeah, I just think it's so special that even I would tell anyone listening, like, even if you don't think you want to make a career necessarily as an author, I do still think it's worthy to write down your stories or to write the book that's inside of you, even if it's just for yourself.
No, I think that is such a wonderful point. I think that there can be this idea of like, well, if I'm not pursuing publication, then I'm not a real writer, or it's not really important, which I think is so far from the truth. Like, it doesn't matter if you're just, you know, writing poetry because it makes you feel good, or you're writing fan fiction because it's fun, or you're writing memoir for your family, like whatever it is. If you're writing, then you're a writer and there's value to what you're saying.
Yes. Yes, exactly. And to circle back around to, thanks, Carissa, you know, a decade of rejection and thinking that maybe it wouldn't ever be published, that maybe I did just write it for me, but it still was so, such a worthy experience. I was so proud that I wrote it. And, I do think it can be helpful to separate the writing experience from everything that happens after that, that isn't as much in our control, and just being proud of ourselves for writing our books in the best way that we can, and kind of letting the rest of it be what it will.
Yeah. Okay. Real fast before we move on to our bonus round, would you tell listeners a little bit about your podcast, Overflowing Bookshelves?
Yes. Yes. Started it, I guess it was shortly before the pandemic. It was just at the very end of 2019, because I am a pretty social person, but writing can be so solitary. And I was just wanting more connection with other writers. And I have a toddler now. So at the time she was only one. And so I was feeling like it was harder for me to get out in the world, going to literary events, just having this little baby at home. And so I like to daydream when I go on walks. And so a question I was asking myself is, if I had a podcast, what would it be? And I was thinking, well, I would just love to chat with other writers about their books and about their processes. And I'm always just so interested in talking to other writers. And so I thought, well, what if I do it? What if I try? And so if each episode of my podcast is me just chatting, similar to this, Marissa, is chatting with another writer about, you know, their path to publication, their advice to other writers. And it's been so wonderful just to get to have this way of connecting with other authors. And I think one thing that just strikes me the most is how we all have such different processes, and, you know, our stories are different as we write in different genres, but there's so much about the creative process that is similar. Like, it's comforting to feel like we're kind of all in this together, even though we all have our own paths and our own individual stories. Like, it's really made me recognize the similarities, I think, that we all go through.
Yeah. No, it's true. There is so much overlap, so much similarity. And that's one thing that I've really found has been fun about having this podcast, is that every guest, like, some of them I know have met in the past, but the vast majority of my guests I have never spoken to before we, you know, sign on to do the recording. And yet I know right off the bat, we have this huge thing in common, and it's like an immediate kinship with other writers, which is really special. Like, I don't get that from too many other areas of my life.
Yes. Yes. And I wonder too, now that I'm thinking about it, I wonder if it was something I was kind of missing from being in school, being in writing classes with a bunch of other writers.
Yeah.
So trying to kind of cultivate that for myself.
Yeah. Yeah. No, for me, it was kind of when the pandemic hit, all of the conferences and book festivals and everything got canceled. And it was like, yeah. But I get so much joy and so much inspiration from just like sitting in the green room between panels, talking to other writers. What am I going to do if I don't have that? And so this was kind of me filling that space.
And I think it's so great to get to even just listen to other writers talk. And it just, you feel like you're not alone, and you feel like, you know, if you're having a hard day writing, you can think about a guest that you heard talk about like their struggles. And I think it helps you feel like you're not alone in the process.
Yes. You're not alone out there, everybody. We're here for you. All right, Dallas, are you ready for our bonus round?
I am.
Tea or coffee?
Definitely tea.
Cake or pie?
Probably chocolate cake.
Writing in the morning or writing at night?
This one is hard. I am naturally a night writer, but since my daughter was born and she's an early riser, I've had to be more of a morning writer. So I'm trying to train myself to be morning.
What is your favorite romantic movie?
Oh my goodness. I would say When Harry Met Sally.
It's a good one. If Thanks Carissa for Ruining My Life had a theme song, what would it be?
It would definitely be Taylor Swift's You Belong With Me.
How do you fill the creative well?
Reading is a huge one for me, and going for walks.
Do you have any writing rituals?
Yes, I have a certain tea, a green tea, that I only drink when I'm working on my novel. And I also
have some sort of snack, usually chocolate related. Currently, it is Trader Joe's chocolate covered blueberries that I only let myself snack on when I'm writing.
What book makes you happy?
Oh, so many. Well, I was just telling you before we hit record, Marissa, currently I'm reading Serendipity, which is making me very happy. Yay! I'm reading a story every night before bed, and I just love, I love love. I love YA love stories, and just every story is a treat.
Oh, that makes me happy. Thank you. What are you working on next?
I am actually working on a sequel to Thanks, Carissa. It's my first ever sequel. But yeah, I'm really excited about it. I'm having a lot of fun.
Can you tell us anything about it?
It starts when the first book leaves off. So Rose is back home, and it's sort of exploring the aftermath of what happens when she's kind of back in her normal life and the show is airing. And there are some surprises and twists that happen.
Oh, that sounds fun. Cause I was wondering, like, what would the reactions be when everybody finally gets to actually watch it?
Yes. Yeah. It's fun to explore.
Lastly, where can people find you?
You can find me at my website, dallaswoodburn.com. And I also like to hang out on Facebook and Instagram at Dallas Woodburn Author. If anyone listening does order Thanks, Carissa, I am sending out signed book plates and stickers. And so you can always message me on Instagram at Dallas Woodburn Author. I would love to send you one.
Awesome. Free swag. Who doesn't love that?
Yes.
Dallas, thank you so much for joining me today.
Thank you. It's been such a pleasure.
Readers, definitely check out Thanks, Carissa, for Ruining My Life. It is out now. Of course, we always encourage you to support your local indie bookstore if you can. If you don't have a local indie, you can check out our affiliate store at bookshop.org/shop/Marissa Meyer. We will be on break next week again because I'm going to be in Disney World. Woohoo! After that, when we come back, I'm going to be talking with Lily Lanoff about her debut novel. It is a gender-bent retelling of The Three Musketeers. Sounds amazing. Titled One for All. If you're enjoying these conversations, please subscribe and follow us on Instagram at Marissa Meyer Author and at Happy Writer Podcast. Oh, and don't forget that we are still having our 100 episodes giveaway. If you haven't followed us yet and entered on Instagram, you could win a $100 gift card to Bookshop. So definitely follow us and check that out. Until next time, stay healthy, stay cozy, and whatever life throws at you today, I do hope that now you're feeling a little bit happier.